This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Dare interrupt me during my midday fast.
Yeah.
Oh, the Spiegel and Holmes show.
Danny Parkins.
We have one soap opera expert and star on the show. Yeah. We have Rock Hudson of Guiding Light on the show. So, yeah.
Well, it's actually Rock Hoover, but
Rock,
you know.
Hoover. Me,
Rock Hudson.
Who is Rock Hudson?
Rock Hudson passed away many
years ago.
Yes, many
years.
Whatever. Co-host of Breakfast Ball on Fox Sports 1.
Danny's Cubs beat the MLB best Padres last night in extra innings, thanks to Nico Horner's triple. So, Danny, does the hot start make you think maybe the Cubs are contenders?
Oh, been thinking it stink. That's my guy, Nico Horner, right there. Let's go, Cubby.
He abandoned us.
We've got Craig Counsell joining us.
What do you think of Breakfast Ball? 8 a.m. Eastern time on Fox Sports with our boy Danny Parkins. Yeah, any review?
You know, Danny was great on the radio.
Danny Parkins with Spiegel and Holmes.
That is the story of the game. So I'm with my Slim Reaper friend over here.
On 670 The Score.
Danny Parkins now joining us here on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. CircaLasVegas.com. Danny, we did not disturb bath time, right? I feel like this is a little earlier than the last time that you were on the show, and that was probably closer to bath time, maybe?
Anytime is bath time, Lawrence. You never know. Sometimes you need a bath right away when you get off of work later in the day. Maybe I'll take a bath at the end of this. I don't know. Baths are lovely.
Do you have, is there somebody on staff at Fox who comes and takes care of the bath? Some sponge cleaning, perhaps?
No. No, okay. That's the one thing I still have to do for myself. I still have to wash myself. I have to put the Epsom salt in the tub by myself.
That ain't right. Lawrence, I'm remembering when he got sick in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And,
that was great.
Oh, and they sent him.
It was fun.
Like all of a sudden the Fox ER doc shows up with an IV in his hotel room.
I kind of knew that things are different on the national level, but that really gives you an idea. Yeah. Of how differently things are. Like, you'll just come in here hacking up a lung. Danny
oh, yeah, he will. Those are fun days.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just that.
Danny was taken care of. Like, Oh, Mr. Parkins, do you need anything from the pharmacy? As a matter of fact, here's a doctor with your script. Let's get it.
Let me just say, I noticed that you two, as Spiegel partners, just had a bonding moment about something that annoyed you about me, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it one little
surprise,
bit.
Surprise, surprise.
I actually have a top 10 list prepared.
And he sent it to me when I got the job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he's just been texting me back, check on item 7. Oh, a classic 2 happened today. Yeah. Exactly.
You guys have a shorthand of Spiegel annoyances.
Common things that happen. But, you know, it was funny at the Super Bowl, too, because Mitch was there, and we were supposed to meet up, and I was vomiting, so I couldn't. And he said, would you like any soup? Like, he was willing to find me a cup of soup. But Fox sent a doctor and brought me IV bags that were earmarked for the Philadelphia Eagles. I was like, yeah, keep your Jewish penicillin, Mitch. I don't need it.
God.
I don't need it.
So that's the best we have, is that Mitch will get a soup from time to time.
I miss it. I miss it greatly. There are some perks, I will say.
If Danny were here, the soup would have been ideal. He's not
true.
Here. Right. He was at the Super Bowl.
That's right.
And had to get his ass back on the air. And so they did whatever they needed to do to get him back on the air.
But you're going
to
be back here. You're going to be the Radiothon, the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon is returning, as is Danny, with appearances on this show leading up to it. Very cool. Tell people what we're getting on the 31st of July.
Yeah, good booking by Alex Kuhn, by the way. He got me on. That was a good job by him.
He's got skills.
Yeah, he's very good. Cute blue headphones, Alex, by the way. I like it. Let's see.
Thanks, Danny.
No problem. they look very good. They're child's headphones. The fact that the Radiothon gets to continue, second annual Cubs for a Cure Radiothon. It'll be the third Radiothon, obviously, that we've done, is an amazing thing. It's in my Fox deal. It was one of the things that I talked about. First thing I talked about with Mitch and Kevin Cassidy when I let them know about the Fox job. They wanted it to continue. The Cubs wanted it to continue. Obviously, in honor of my brother Brad and my work with Brain Up, I'm highly motivated to continue it. And it's amazing that we're able to do it. I mean, if you think about it, with Austin Harvest, which is up and running and crushing it in Austin with, you know, the vast majority of that original class of kids in college right now, and as freshmen, which is unbelievable. And then, you know, the Radiothon last year, $560,000, 100% donated to cancer research. In two Radiothons, we're over $1.2 million was raised. And so, you know, this year we'll see what number we can post. And you know, the Cubs got it just over $1 million last year, 100% to cancer research with the partners at Stand Up to Cancer and Brain Up. And, you know, we'll talk about it more as it gets closer. But, you know, what I always say is, like, you know, my DMs are open. People can email me. People can tweet at me. If you want to get involved as just like a individual of means or a company, sponsorships, you know, dollar for dollar matches for an hour. Like, it's a day where the radio station kind of gets turned over to give back to the community in a beautiful way. So please hit me up if you want to get involved, and we can make it happen, and we can make it beneficial for your company and for a great cause.
I got to say, I always think of, when the Radiothon comes up, I think, Lawrence, of the moment at the end of the very first Radiothon. As Danny
I hate that moment for Danny.
Oh, he's walking triumphantly but exhaustedly from the studio to anywhere. Like, I don't think he cared where he was going.
He was going to bed or going to get something to eat.
Yeah, something.
That's right.
And Mitch Rosen met him with a sweet idea, but kind of a loud and startling execution.
Whoa! That'll wake me up. Jesus Christ. That's congratulations.
For those, that's where the congratulations comes from. Two, like, violent,
right,
explosive
there in the hallway, like right next to Danny's ear. He couldn't. How long was it before that ear started functioning again?
I definitely still felt it the next day. People like, you know, you stay up for 24 straight hours, and you really, with the address, it's like 30 straight hours, you know, because it starts at 10 in the morning. That was the lasting ramifications of that radio line, and it's the second one. You know, they always say it's the second confetti popper that'll get you. The first one was at a safe distance, but he felt the need to do that second one as I was walking close.
Whoa!
It's this one here.
That'll wake me up.
There we go.
That's the one. That's the one that got
Cats, congratulations.
Yeah.
They always say the second confetti popper will get you. Was that Aristotle? Aristotle?
I believe so. I think I learned that when I was interning for Mac. I think it's one of the original rules of radio. It's a dangerous business. The second confetti popper will get you. But no, seriously, it's very cool. Cubs are involved in a big way again, obviously, and we'll have more details as it gets closer. But July 31st to August 1st, and I'm pumped to be coming back on with you guys with some degree of regularity. That's going to be fun.
Well, let's get to the draft, because I know that on Breakfast Ball, you've had a couple of minutes to get to the Bears and what they've done. For the folks here that care about your opinion on the Bears, how did you think they did?
Yeah, you know, I think that draft analysis is funny because there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of experts in it. It's a cottage industry. And if a guy is the 15th ranked player and you draft him 10th, you overdrafted him. And if the guy's the 15th ranked player and you drafted him 20th, you got a steal. But clearly the NFL general managers don't agree with the mock drafters. Case in point, Shedeur Sanders. So, you know, grades are ridiculous. I think what I said about the Colston Loveland pick is what the majority of people, I assume, said is that's a Ben Johnson pick. There was no first round pick that was more directly influenced by the head coach than that pick in the first round. Like, the Chiefs drafting Josh Simmons was a four need pick. They had four guys play left tackle. They drafted a left tackle to protect Patrick Mahomes. But like that was a coach pick. And if you love Ben Johnson, and I don't know how any Bears fan could be out on him at this point, I think you have to love the pick. And as good as Ashton Jeanty seems, it's one thing to draft a running back in the top 10. Some of them have been successful, some of them haven't been. And I was afraid of it simply for, like, are the Bears ready for it? To me, that's a icing on the cake type of thing. That's not a as you're building type of thing. But I would have trusted Ben Johnson if he did it. But trading up for a running back at that point of the draft, that only turns out poorly. Like, that's I can't think of a trade into the top five for a running back that's aged well. Basically, it's never happened. Trent Richardson's the only one, and that was a disaster. So it's just trading into the top five for a non-premium position almost exclusively in NFL history is a bad idea. There are a few exceptions. You know, like Julio Jones is an exception. But like you want to trade up. Will Anderson for the Texans is an exception. But I think put that in a totally different bucket because they had also drafted C.J. Stroud in the same draft, right? So like they were getting quarterback on a rookie deal and edge rusher on a rookie deal. But like I just never bought that they would trade up for a running back, even though it would have been wildly exciting. So I know that's only the first round and you asked about the whole draft, but that was my main takeaway, was they would have taken Jeanty if he fell. Because he didn't, they wanted to go blue chip offensive upside for a guy who fit with Ben Johnson.
We're in the exact same place on this, Danny, because it didn't, when I heard people talking about it draft morning, I'm like, that sounds silly to do. If he's there, then you do it. And you go, hey, this guy could be exciting. But the idea of giving away capital for that move to me would have been a kind of a nightmare scenario. I'd have been like, what are they doing up there?
Well, think about how good he would have to be.
Yes.
To justify it. You're basically saying, like, Alvin Kamara is the floor. You know, like, he has to be, like, Bijan Robinson would be a disappointment if he became that.
And I would argue that Bijan Robinson is a disappointment for a top 10 draft pick.
Right. Well, but he's also very clearly good.
Sure.
But they weren't ready to use a top 10 pick
right
on a running back. Like, Saquon Barkley was not disappointing as a Giant. He was awesome as a Giant. Then he got hurt. It was being the second overall pick that made it a bad pick, right? And then obviously injury played a part in it. But like, nobody doubted that Saquon Barkley was awesome. And then he goes to Philly and he has arguably the best running back season ever. So
no, you're right. The context of it, you know, it changes the way we perceive it for sure. Look, it was absolutely a Ben pick. The whole draft was kind of a Ben draft. But that's the way it's supposed to be. How many times did we hang out and talk on Parkins and Spiegel or Spiegel and Parkins? And we've talked about it so much here on Spiegel and Holmes about the Bears needing
to have a head coach that they allowed to be the philosophical godhead of the organization. They were afraid to do it. For decades, they were afraid to do it. They're no longer afraid to do it. This is Ben's organization, and that is sensible in terms of the way the NFL should be run right now.
Yeah, I think if you hire him and you pay him, you have to empower him. And it's not, I mean, the council has more power than Jed right now. He makes more money. But, you know, Ben Johnson has more power than Ryan Poles. He makes more money. And so I think that you can't be out on Ben Johnson yet. He hasn't coached a game. You know, the Luther Burden pick is fascinating, too. He's unbelievably talented. But he had some quit in his game at Missouri last year. And whether that was because they had a disappointing season and they had bad quarterback play and they thought they were going to be a playoff team and they weren't, and he was focused on the draft. Like, he is a first-round talent. I had someone with Missouri football tell me that he is the best recruit in the history of Missouri football. And
wow.
In terms of, yeah, exactly. Like, and that's Chase Daniel, Jeremy Maclin, Alden Smith, Doriel Green Beckham. Like, you know, they have gotten some real, real players to go there. And they say that when they got him, he was the biggest deal for that program in terms of the caliber of the player that they were getting. And with the ball in his hands, he's crazy explosive. That is a very high upside pick, which I love. Like, swing for the fences, try to hit the home run, all of those sorts of analogies. And so Antoine Randall, like, that's your project. He can't be an 80% guy. Like, if he gives max effort and is fully bought in and you turn him into a professional football player, just not a guy who plays pro sports, but a true professional, he could be the steal of the draft. He's that talented. That's at least how it was described to me.
Danny, how are you enjoying Cubs season?
Casually. Oh, it's so great. Oh my God, is it awesome.
Wait a minute. That sounds like a guy not watching the games and knows he doesn't have to and he's allowed to and enjoying highlights every once in a while. That's daily. What casually sounded like.
Daily highlights. Daily highlights. Yes.
The games are good too, just so you know. The actual games are also good.
Yeah, you know, when I happen to stumble across one, I'm fine with how that's going.
Do you get marquee in New Jersey, Danny?
I don't know. Listen.
Amazing.
I got a lot of thoughts though.
It never stopped you before.
I got a lot of thoughts, and then I do want to talk about Shane. But Kyle Tucker, the discourse here. You guys correct me if I'm wrong. There's no precedent ever for a guy on a rental signing early, right? It's never happened.
Yeah, I can't think of something. It's happened, but
who?
I'm trying to think of like someone that is definitely headed towards big money, who would then sign away their rights to getting the big money.
I can't come up with anyone.
You mean an in-season rental?
I'm saying a player who is a year away from free agency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who is playing 1 year with a team and then signing with that team early. It's such an unreasonable ask.
Hold on. I don't agree with that because
this is the fight we've been having on the show.
Well, but hold on.
Because the Cubs should want to pay him and correct. The Cubs should try to win
but hold on.
The bidding. Correct. The idea that he would sign early is hard for me to imagine.
Well, are you talking only MLB?
Yes.
Okay, because the NBA and the NFL is full of examples where a guy's got 1 year left on the deal and that's when a trade happens and he signs the extension with the new team. It happens all the time.
Oh,
right?
No, but the deals are capped in basketball. Mm-hmm. Luka can sign a deal, a max deal, that is the same deal that the Lakers could offer him, that the Rockets could offer him, that the Knicks could offer them. The only team that could sign Luka to a longer, more lucrative deal would have been Dallas, his current team. That's what the bird rights were. Like, in baseball, as you well know, it's an open market. So the thing that drives the most money is the most people bidding on your services. Football contracts, while not as slotted in free agency, like, I can probably tell you within $1 million or two what Micah Parsons is going to sign with, because you just go to the Myles Garrett deal, you add 2-5%, and that's the contract. You know, like, it's, there's not, in those sports, like, Like, if Juan Soto would have been traded and then signed before hitting free agency, that would be a comp for this. Like, Vlad Guerrero, he's been with Toronto for forever.
Mm-hmm.
He's what, 30 years old? He's done all of his ARB years. He got traded. He is 4 months away from 20 billionaires calling his agent and inquiring on a price. The idea that, like, Wrigley Field magic is going to make him give that up.
He's 28.
Yeah. 28, excuse me. Like, but that he's going to give that up 4 months early, it is such an unreasonable ask of a human being that none of us would do or advise our son or friend to do. Like, sign as a Cub if you want to, for sure, and I hope they pay him. Like, lefty power, man. It's basically the most valuable thing in the sport. He's awesome. But sign early? That just feels like wasted breath. Like, I can't, unless you can say it happened with Bryce Harper, or it happened with Juan Soto, or it happened with...
Well,
like,
there are some people making the argument that it happened with Mookie Betts, and I would say the difference is, and this is one of my issues with the thing with Tucker, if they were going to do it, they should have done it upon getting the trade done.
Did Betts play?
Betts played, and yeah. Then he was...
Final year of the deal.
Right.
But I'm saying, when did he sign?
He signed in February, which is what I'm saying. Like, if you were going to get a deal done with Kyle Tucker, then that deal needed to be done right after the trade, and you need to wow him and go, hey, man, we're all in. Here's $400 million right now.
Okay, and listen, if Mookie Betts is the answer, and then there's your precedent, okay, great.
No, I think that you're right is once you let him get into the season, it's too late.
The money's going up. It's going up every time. So let me get this straight. So the wasted breath thing. So you wouldn't be, if you were here, you wouldn't be advocating for fans to do whatever they can, for us as talk show hosts to do whatever we can, Operation Woo Kyle Tucker. Because I'm the chairman of Operation Woo Kyle Tucker, and I feel like you're telling me my breath is wasted, and I'm it's bringing up a lot of issues from our time together, frankly.
Listen, you know I love a stunt, Speaks.
I know you do.
Like Omar Infante was going to get those all-star votes, but I still attached myself to it to make people think that it was my doing.
Right. You'd be all over Operation Woo Kyle Tucker. Don't pretend you wouldn't be, sir.
But of course. But I wouldn't be setting up the expectation. Like, he might sign in June. I would want, like, that when he signs in the offseason, him to say, I felt the love from Cubs fans all year, hashtag woo Kyle Tucker. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the goal would be that he shouts you out on the back end, not that it's actually possible that it happens before an in-season series with the Diamondbacks.
I'll look for more precedent for this conversation.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
I think it matters a ton in the sport. But listen, not to hijack the situation, but like I just wanted to say, like, I love Shane so much, and I, you know, he was my guy. He was all of our guys, but like I wanted him to be the EP, and you called him like a, what'd you used to say?
The most unique profile. Most unique profile of any executive producer I can think of. Yeah.
I mean, like, he booked Ice Cube on the fly for a mock draft to do the Raiders pick. And then he would miss an hour of the show to make us steak. And then, like, you know, it was just, it was so insane. You know, and then a baseball player would threaten to sue us. And then we would get called into an office. But then, you know, businesses and world-renowned chefs would line up to host us in the city. And, like, NFL players would say how much they like him. Like Kyle Long and Manley and Wani. And, like, I love the dude, and I think he will crush in this industry if that's what he wants to do. I talked to him yesterday. You know, maybe he does the Shane's food truck that I've said that Wani should fund. He's probably going to ask me to fund it, but Wani can fund that. But, you know, I'll be customer number one, but I have so many, like, stories and memories, and he's been so kind to my family, and him and Brad became texting friends, and just, like, he's just a creative, talented, interesting, multifaceted, complicated hilarious pain in the ass. Like, I love him so much. And so, you know, I just shout out to Shane, you know, member of the mob forever. And I love that dude.
Good stuff, Danny. I'm glad you got a chance to say it. It's a tough thing for everybody all around, without a doubt.
So Danny, every couple weeks we'll check in with you, right?
Yeah, whenever you guys want, really. I mean, as much or as little as you want, hopefully at least every couple of weeks, that'd be great. But mm-hmm. I'm here, man. I'm available.
By the way, Mookie Betts signed his extension in July of his first season in L.A. So there's your direct corollary.
Okay.
A 12-year, $300-plus million deal signed with the Dodgers in July of his first season after being traded for Alex Verdugo and a lot more.
So he was a month and a half away from free agency.
Correct.
Okay. So
two and a half months away.
There's your comp.
Yep.
There's your, all right. And again, if the answer is there's one comp, the rational thought provider in me speaks would say you're arguing the exception rather than the rule.
And I would add that is the one place where you knew you were going to get every dollar. Like, that's the one place where you don't have to go shop it.
Yeah.
Because the place that's going to pay you the most money is the place where you're sitting at, which the Cubs should be.
This is the moment, Lawrence. And Lawrence has been saying, bully them, hoes. This is your moment to offer him $550 in June or July and just get the deal done. I bet he takes $550 in June or July.
$550 is a very big number.
Yes, yeah. It sure is.
that's a lot of zeros.
They got to go to $500 to get it done, and I think it might take $550, and this is their moment to do it.
God, they could have had Bryce Harper for $200 million less than that.
How about that? And he wanted to be here.
And they didn't engage.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, you know, price of the brick goes up. Like, that's right.
That's right, Fat Joe.
But this is a different moment.
$200 million.
That was a moment more. Where you Darvish money looked bad, and like,
no, I know.
So it was a different moment. Well, do it now.
And am I right? The Cubs have never signed anyone for more than $200 million.
It's
Jason Hayward is the biggest deal in the history. Yeah, that's the biggest deal in the history of the franchise.
That's a big jump to $550 million.
It's time. Step up.
You might be right about that. We'll see. Danny, this was delightful. Thank you very much. We appreciate your words about Shane.
Oh, of course, man. Any talk Shane any day. And Alex Kuhn, love those headphones. Can I get a copy?
Thanks again, Danny.
No problem.
Shane replacement.
It's the same color as the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon shirt that I got from last year. So.
Yeah, it still fits, right?
Yeah. It does. I wear it all the time.
Awesome.
Look at you make fun of a guy when he's trying to do synergy. Good job, Danny.
All right, well... I haven't changed. See you guys.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Grand Bigs.
Bigs time.
Bigs.
With Mully and Haw. Bigs time.
The Bigs Report. With Brad Bigs.
Bigs time.
Bigsy.
His name is Brad Bigs.
Brad Bigs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Brad Bigs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a long time contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Big Zay!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you know the story. The Bears completed their draft, and they walked away with eight players, three of whom they took in the second round. What is your take on the Bears draft?
Yeah, when you get half your draft in the top two rounds, you ought to feel like you're going to have some impact players coming in to help you improve not only competition and depth, but starters. Like these guys, maybe it doesn't happen right away, but there's been drafts in the not too distant past where you've looked at it and you said, yeah, well, they got all these guys, but wait a minute, like most of them are round five or later. These are some big picks for Ryan Poles, for Ben Johnson, and you would hope that they get benefits from these new players sooner rather than later.
When you look at Ozzie Trapillo from Boston College, he's primarily a right tackle, or at least he has been the last couple of years. How do you envision him fitting into that situation you just described?
Well, I think you're looking at him at right tackle to start with. Really, really massive individual. If you get him out on the grass and you feel like he can move maybe better than you expected, perhaps you dabble with him at left tackle. But I don't think you want to give a new player too much to try to accomplish from the get-go. You want to make it not as simple as you can for him, but you want to put these young players in a position to have some success, build confidence, and move forward.
Who, in your opinion, we've got a lot of people checking in, was the head coach referring to Ben Johnson when he said that they turned up the notch or dialed up the notch or turned the notch a dial, whatever way he put it? Who was he talking about? He was talking about Cole Kmet, obviously, a lot of people speculating, was he talking about DJ Moore?
Yeah, I don't know that he was talking about Cole Kmet. Like, look, they're going to run if what Ben Johnson did previously in Detroit is a loose guideline for what you're going to see here. They're going to run a lot of personnel with two tight ends. You need two of them. So does that turn up the heat on Cole? Like, yeah, there's been so much hand-wringing over the dip in production in the passing game from Cole Kmet this past season, and I really struggle to put a lot of the blame on Cole. I'm looking more at the coordinators. I'm looking some at the quarterback, you know, maybe reticent at times to throw the ball over the middle or get to some of the secondary reads. So I know it's been popular and it's been sport to kind of be critical of Cole Kmet, but you got to understand he's a wide tight end, okay? He's not this pass-catching tight end that isn't really involved in your running game. He's a wide tight end with significant upside in the passing game. So his numbers are never going to look like Brock Bowers with the Raiders or something. He's not that kind of player, but he can be involved in the running game, and I think they still value him pretty highly there. In fact, I know they do. DJ Moore, yeah, that's interesting. I wondered that a little bit, Mully, with the selection of Luther Burden. You know, hopefully it's all of them. Hopefully it's Roschon Johnson, and hopefully it's any of the offensive linemen that are kind of in the mix. So hopefully they bring in a couple undrafted players and just be throwing a dart at the board right now. But hopefully they bring in a couple undrafted guys that are pushing for a spot at the back end of that roster as a backup in the secondary or a backup at another spot where they could have an impact on special teams.
Your point about Cole Kmet's a good one, Brad. I think what Mully's getting to or alluding to is the same thing I wondered as well. When you look at his role on this team, nobody is diminishing how important he can be and what he is in terms of a leader in that locker room. But he's also among the top 10 highest paid tight ends in the league. That's a lot of money, $9.9 million next year for somebody who you just described as a supplemental piece, maybe a complementary piece to your passing game. That's usually what you pay a guy who is your primary target on third and five or in the red zone. And he's not that guy. So I do wonder moving forward.
He was that guy, Dave, in 2023 when he had, what, I want to say 7 touchdown catches. I believe, like he has been that guy in the past. And again, he's not gonna light the world on fire in comparison to some of these other tight ends. He's not going to go out there and have 105 catches for 1,100 yards, but he can be that guy on third and five. He's proven to be effective in the red zone, and it's going to be up to the coaching staff and the quarterback to find a way to greatly utilize Cole Kmet, Colston Loveland, all the wide receivers, the running backs. Like, it's a good problem to have, but they've got to prove they can do that this year where they failed miserably at this a year ago.
That's a good point. Good answer. Just, he's a fifth option in the passing game.
Yeah, right. You know, and I got to ask you, Brad, when
your wide tight end shouldn't be the first option. So
let me ask you about Loveland in particular, because we talked to Olin on Saturday, and he said that they never really used him in line during last year at Michigan because he had this shoulder injury, which was clearly causing him issues, that you could see him wincing and grabbing at the shoulder at different times. He played the year with this injury. He has had surgery on his shoulder. Do you know what his time frame is? In other words, when he comes in and if he will be ready to go right away? And I'm just curious, could he be used? I mean, I know they're going to take advantage of the mismatch on the outside and he's going to be stretching the seam, but could they even use him differently in terms of an inline player eventually here because of his age? He's barely 21, and he's going to be getting bigger and stronger.
Yeah, in terms of the injury, I think we could see him running routes and doing stuff here. They don't want him having any contact, and
right.
The rules say you're not supposed to have any contact in these off-season settings. I think we're all cognizant of the fact that sometimes things get elevated in terms of competition for first-year head coaches in some of these non-contact sessions. Remember the Bears, I believe they got penalized during Matt Eberflus's first year for a little too much contact. But they want to steer clear of that with Loveland, I think, to have him fully cleared in advance of training camp. Like, no concern that he won't be ready to go there. And I think you make a good point that I believe the feeling is that this guy, because of his frame and sort of his temperament and demeanor, they believe that he could be an asset as a blocker moving forward. Like, that's an area where you can coach a player up. Some of the other stuff that Colston Loveland does that sets him apart, that made him the first tight end drafted in this class, the position coach can't coach. Like, it's the athletic ability combined with the size and movement skills. Like, that's good luck coaching that up. But improving as a blocker, being more effective in that area, absolutely. I think they can get significantly better with Colston Loveland in that phase.
Brad, what did you think of the way Ryan Poles explained being sort of boxed out of selecting a running back? And how realistic is it to expect Kyle Manungai from Rutgers in the seventh round to contribute?
Yeah, you wanted to get a running back that was going to fit what you were looking for, right, in a loaded running back class. And I believe they like Travion Henderson an awful lot, and he goes the pick before to New England, and when the draft had ended Thursday night, round one, I looked at it. I said, well, who's in front of the Bears? You know, how could this shake out? And I thought the Patriots maybe were the only team that would go with a running back there at the very top of round two, and that ended up happening. There's probably some other backs in there they liked a little bit, but Manungai, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, he's a guy that I think has a chance. I really do. Like, this could be their best seventh round pick since Charles Leno, and the bar's low with some of those guys that have been drafted since Leno. But I think when you look at opportunity for starters, and then you consider what this guy did at Rutgers for that program. I talked with a national scout from another team, and this is going back to it was probably late March, guys. And we're talking about players. We're spending some time going over a variety of different positions. And I got to running back, and I said, who could be a tone setter that doesn't play at Ohio State or Boise State? And he rattled off a couple names, wasn't some crazy long list. And he said, I don't know where he's going to get drafted, but I love the kid from Rutgers. And he said, wow. he's going to make somebody's roster and find a way to contribute positively. So, I didn't know anything about him. I don't watch a lot of, lower tier Big Ten football, which I think is where Rutgers is at. But
ouch,
he did real well there, and I think he's got a shot, Dave.
I love it,
Brad. You do watch some Mizzou football.
Yeah, you do.
What did you actually take part in that hug fest they had when they drafted that kid?
Or was it just a fist pump?
Were you just off camera hugging?
I was surprised,
Kevin Warren.
I'm surprised they went with a wide receiver there. I hope the plan works, right? There's one football. There's a lot of mouths to feed. However you want to slice it up, I hope it works out. Super dynamic as a sophomore at Missouri in 2023, and had a significant impact as a true freshman. Right? I mean, that was a recruiting coup to land him, and then the production and the numbers really dipped this past season. The quarterback struggled, regressed. The quarterback had a series of injuries. They played a backup that was terrible. So the numbers don't look nearly as impressive as they do from his sophomore season. But, he's made some huge plays against some really good college defenses.
I seem to recall somebody doing some sort of a dance when Justin Gage was once drafted out of Mizzou.
Wow.
Did you have any?
He was a pretty good player. No, I had no reaction. I was more surprised than anything just that they went with a wide receiver when you looked at it and you said, what about an edge rusher?
Right,
Late in the draft, I thought Roschon Johnson was one of the real winners for players on the roster, right? Just like whose position is a little bit better than maybe it could have been coming out of this draft. And I think you look at Austin Booker, right? Maybe now he's going to actually be a winner. He's got to go out and be a better and more productive player this season. But in terms of opportunity and not getting knocked down a peg or two, it's sitting there for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and that's a good point. I look at the other guy coming into the defensive line room, Shamar Turner from Texas A&M, and I wonder, Brad, who does he threaten in terms of playing time or a roster spot?
I don't think he threatens anyone, because if you're doing it right, you're keeping those guys fresh, right? And one of the things that maybe the Falcons were guilty of last year was playing Grady Jarrett too much, especially coming off an ACL the year before. Those are big guys that can wear down. Zach Pickens was going to face a real challenge to make this roster without Shamar Turner coming on board, probably. So I just think getting Shamar Turner in a situation where, maybe he can observe Grady Jarrett and how he goes about his craft in the meeting room, in the weight room, on the practice field, and things of that nature. That's really smart because physically, he sort of profiles the same way. And Grady Jarrett has been a fantastic player in this league. That fantastic part of that career is probably not going to stretch too much longer. The Bears signed him to a 3-year deal that really, when you look at it, it's like two. And if he's, defying old man in time, maybe he gets to that third season. But Turner, athletic, can create havoc in the middle of the pocket. And they certainly have had a need for that. So I like that move a lot. And he's a guy that, listen, without that shin fracture, stress fracture that he played on pretty much all last season, he's a guy that could have been drafted at the very top of round two. And there was discussion last summer, he's a guy whose name you would have heard as a potential pick somewhere in round one. So they got a guy that it's coming off that 6-sack season he had had the previous season. He was hot for scouts to get a look at.
Brad, we were talking earlier about the fact that the Bears came out of a draft the last 2 years and signed a defensive end 1 year and then traded for a guy to help him as a defensive end. Is that the new running back position? Could you see, I don't know who, someone older, maybe injured, whether it's someone like Chubb or J.K. Dobbins, could you see the Bears picking up some help at running back in order to kind of fuel the play action game?
And potentially, you know, a lot of people have talked about Chubb. I mean, he had a brutal, brutal knee injury there in 2023. Yep. His production last year wasn't very good. I'm not going to pretend like I've watched a lot of Nick Chubb from the action that he did have this past season, but I don't think you'd be getting the Nick Chubb that everybody likes to think about. I would look at running back as one of those positions, Molly. Possibly safety, although kind of never mentioned in this safety discussion is Elijah Hicks, who they still have, who has played a pretty good amount in terms of a backup. And I believe it's possible that them coming out of this draft without a safety at least says a little something about the confidence that they have in him to go out and perform. But that safety position is one where you could potentially see a small handful of players with other teams released in the coming 2-3 weeks. You could go out and get a guy if you needed one. So I would kind of bundle those two positions together as ones to maybe keep an eye on a little bit. But I don't think they have to go out and get a Dobbins or a Chubb. I'd be really interested in seeing what Kyle Manungai can do, you know, how the new coaching staff feels about Roschon Johnson. Remember, the front office loved Roschon when they got him in here.
Okay.
And for a variety of reasons, including injury, he didn't get on the field a whole lot this past season. But what do the coaches think about the guys you've got first?
You surprised me today, Brad.
Great.
Thanks.
Stuff. Good stuff. Thank you, Bigsy.
It's always good stuff, Dave. You got to be a little more open-minded.
I am very open-minded, Brad. I'm just glad that you are. So, good stuff. Thank you,
Brad. That's great stuff.
Have a great day, guys.
KC, good morning. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing all right.
We're playing fantasy basketball.
Yes, we are.
And we are wheeling and dealing, my friend. You wouldn't believe some of the trades we have in mind. I guess now that that Damian Lillard is out next year and a certain Greek basketball player may want to come see some of the wonderful restaurants we have in Chicago, we've decided that we can make a deal for Giannis Antetokounmpo. And we've been wheeling and dealing on that front. Should we just contact AK directly, or should we just make a few more calls?
Let us know, Buzzkill.
Thanks, David. I think we got a Secretary of State involved now. We got a lot going on here.
Yes,
I'm against the trade just because I don't want to have to say that last name on the air multiple times a night. You know, that's a tough pronounce. It's a long shot. I mean, a lot of things need to happen. I mean, first of all, let's analyze the relationship between Giannis and that franchise and that community, right? I mean, that's a pretty... Yep. Unique situation in the league. Giannis has always professed loyalty to that place. Obviously, they can, you know, supersede that loyalty and trade him without his desire or his buy-in. I would be surprised if that would happen. But let's start there. That step has not happened yet. If it were to happen, I mean, it's going to be a bidding war. I assume it's not going to be conducted like the Luka Doncic trade. And
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to hear the package you guys came up with for the Bulls, because I'm struggling to find a suitable one.
Couple first round, for a couple firsts.
How many?
Two? Firsts, how many would it take?
I mean, you're talking about, I would say minimum three. You're talking about top three player in the world.
Okay.
And
three first, Kobe White and Vooch. Would that get it done?
Yeah.
No.
No. You know, I have not spent a lot of time on this, but what I would say is, obviously, I've heard some of the chatter. And it's going to be a dominant theme to this NBA offseason,
right.
Undeniably. And look, the whole league descends upon Chicago very shortly for the NBA draft combine and the draft lottery. So it will be – I'll be walking around asking people about it for sure. But, you know, even like yesterday, I got a – you know, you guys get those emails from like the odds makers sites, different sites. So I got one from yesterday. I just for fun opened it. The Bulls were like 50-1 shots. I mean, it's like if Vegas says that, I mean, you know, I don't see a pathway for a trade for the Bulls. It's fun to talk about. It's fun to fantasize about. I assume that the Bulls would get involved in that bidding, but I don't see a pathway for a Bulls trade.
You never know what could happen in the NBA offseason. So while I accept your rational approach to this Giannis conversation, now do Zion. I don't think it's the same idea. I think there's not as much interest if you're the Bulls. You have to be very cautious about somebody whose availability has been an issue.
Right.
But will there be conversations, do you anticipate, about Zion Williamson coming to Chicago?
Well, I mean, this is going to be like buzzkill radio here, but I mean, you guys heard Arturis' season end news conference, did
yes.
you not? I mean, that sounded like a guy to me who was tired of burning first round picks and, you know, going for the quick fixes attempts, and sounded like a guy who was asking fans for patience to do this the methodical way through the draft. That's what I heard. I could be wrong, but that's what I heard. Now, he did say, you know, I'm open to all opportunities. And he's proven before that if he sees the right opportunity, he will cash in draft picks to try to get it done. But that's not what I heard. And certainly in my conversations with people around the franchise, that is not the mindset that I'm entering the offseason with. I'm entering the offseason with the mindset of adding this first-round pick, looking for an opportunity in free agency, and mostly running this roster back with internal improvement. I mean, how many times have you heard internal development, internal
yes.
improvement
yes.
throughout that news conference? So again, I'm not trying to like say buzzkill. I know that the NBA offseason is like fans' favorite time of the year. It's the best soap opera league in the world. I just that's not the lens with which I'm viewing the Bulls offseason.
I'm curious, when you think about a guy like Zion, would you even want that? Would you even? He's only played in, I think it's 48% of the games he could have played in. Would you recommend making a deal like that? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, as good as he is, and if they brought him here, I'd be Lauryn Hill. You know, the joy of my world would live in Zion. But I don't know that I really want them to bring that guy to town. I'm not sure that's the answer.
Yeah, I personally value availability a lot, obviously, and I look, his talent is again undeniable, and he's a unique player for sure, matchup nightmare, et cetera, et cetera. I think to cash in what it would take to get him here,
yeah,
and it wouldn't certainly be as much as Giannis, obviously, but I'm with you, Mully. That wouldn't be a fit for me given his injury history.
So you do not expect a major trade this offseason for the Bulls?
No. I mean, you wasn't one. I didn't catch your guys' show the day after Arturis' season end news conference.
Right.
I mean, wasn't
we canceled it? We didn't have one.
We
didn't have one. We decided not to have
you,
one. That
you
day.
Basically told us everything the guy was going to say when we talked to you before that news conference.
Who needs AK when you got KC?
Yeah, but I literally was like, oh, well, then you were you were so spot on. And I mean it. And I was, like, a lot of people were angry. I was kind of numb. I already knew.
It was as if KC had written what AK was reading off of.
It was. You were unbelievable that morning.
That should be the title of your autobiography, Mully. A lot of people were angry. I was just kind of numb.
Wow. Well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's like we talk to people around the team. I mean, that's our job, right? So, like, that's, again, that's why I get it, man. I mean, Giannis, it's like, you know, it's big. And like I said, if it happens and he's put in play, of course you make a phone call, but that's still not the mindset that I'm entering this offseason with, number one. And number two, I don't see a Bulls package that makes that work.
But I'm relying on Adam Silver now. The lucky 1.7 needs to strike again. What do you think?
Hey, we'll be there May 12th. Let's go.
Freeze the envelope. Isn't that how it was done with Patrick Hughes?
Like, I'm relying on Alexi Giannoulis. I think that he can get it done.
Oh, he can get it done.
He tweeted out yesterday, and I was all over that because, you know, if you have somebody on your side in government in Chicago, you might have a shot.
And hey, I had lunch at a Greek Islands yesterday. Does that count?
Oh, that's
See?
Great.
Somebody's going to put two and two together. They're going to tweet out a photo of you or making your order, having your lunch, and thinking, he's getting ready for Giannis coming to town.
Oh. Yeah.
This segment's off the rails. How about those games, guys?
Yeah. I mean, listen, the NBA has been great, and it's fun to watch. And it's just, I think we've gone too long without, like, a playoff game to talk about. And so we're all just kind of in this weird mode of, you know, here's how we fix it. Why don't we try this? And there's really no way around it. I think he's giving you he did tell us exactly what they're going to do. And they're just going to roll it back again and hope to improve.
But all joking aside, Mully, that point, yep. I couldn't hit home more emphatically. I mean, Cam Smith and I talked about this on our latest edition of our podcast. Like, I've been so into this first round. The matchups have been awesome. The basketball has been fantastic. The physicality and entertainment level has been off the charts. And I'm just sitting there going, man, I miss covering playoff basketball. It's just such a different animal. And you can understand why, like, again, the Bulls got criticized for this approach, but you can understand why they wanted some of their young players to experience that, because it really just is a different animal. And you've seen that in some of these first-round games. So I'm with you guys. It'd be fun to cover playoff hoops at the United Center again, and hopefully that day is sooner rather than later.
KC, is there a team in the playoffs that has surprised you more than others?
Well, I think I don't think many people expected Minnesota to close them out in five games, especially with a road victory. I just love the way they play. I mean, you got a guy in Anthony Edwards, who obviously is ascending to legit, you know, lead star. And then those role players, Naz Reid, Jaden McDaniels, it's just a really well-built team. The proud veterans and Conley Jr. and Gobert, DiVincenzo off the bench. It'd be the Timberwolves or the Pistons have been my two favorite teams to watch in the first round. I love what the Pistons have done, showing their toughness and, you know, just their hunger and their physicality and their inability to back down. They're a fun team to watch. And Cade Cunningham is another rising star. And that's what this is about, man, watching these players play on this stage and kind of, you know, stake claim to greatness. I mean, that's where your name is made in the playoffs, and seeing guys like Edwards and Cunningham and new faces do it is really refreshing for those of us who've watched this league for a long time.
Great stuff, KC. Thank you for a sobering conversation.
Thank you, KC.
<All right. laughs> We'll talk to you. Thanks, guys.
All right, buddy. That is KC Johnson.
Mizzou looking for six. A little lower the shoulder for Luther Burden. From the loo to the zoo, you call up the plays, he'll choreograph the dances. Touchdown ball! Luther Burden the third takes a shot to the end zone. Burden wide open.
Backing up, looking, lobbing, caught. First down, Burden. The go-to guy comes up huge.
Love the highlight, really. You know who that is. That is the Bears pick at number 39, Luther Burden III out of East St. Louis High School. And we now go to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today, and that is where we bring in the head coach of the Missouri Tigers football team, Coach Eli Drinkwitz. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to be on in the Windy City.
We appreciate having you as well, and I know that it's a great thing that we always get to be able to talk to a lot of the college head coaches, whenever the Bears have a big draft class, they end up getting 8 people to add to their team, and one of them is considered largely the steal of the draft in Luther Burden. When, unfortunately, he finds out he's not going on the first day of the NFL draft, to then go the second day, you know, what do you think was going through his mind, and what did you think of his reaction to just be able to get that call where he knows he's going to play in Ben Johnson's offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime there's an expectation and it doesn't come the way everybody expects it, there's a little bit of disappointment. But, you know, we at the end of the day, on Friday, it was all about, we knew at some point he was going to get drafted, and so we just wanted to be in the moment, stay present, knowing that wherever he got picked was going to be a blessing. He was going to get to realize a childhood dream, and so focus on the positives and kind of reframe the whole thought process of not being a negative, but really being a positive. And then when you get the call from Coach Johnson and he gets to go to an unbelievable organization like the Chicago Bears to match with a coach who's got a great offensive framework and an ability to use playmakers and not force round pegs in a square hole, to play with an elite quarterback with a remade offensive line with great skill players around him, I think there was just a whole level of excitement. Like, you know what? This was orchestrated in the perfect way, and he's going to be the right fit for the organization.
When you look at Luther and his capabilities and see how they have translated from where I know he was just a ridiculous high school star and then made the most of that in college to now going to the NFL, how do you see those translating best to the NFL game as far as what he's doing right now or what he did in college?
Yeah, obviously, I think it's, you know, the biggest adjustment is going to be figuring out the playbook, right, and learning the playbook. But while he's doing that, you know, figuring out, okay, with the ball in his hand, he's really, really difficult to tackle. And so I think the excitement for the Chicago Bears is with the amount of creativity that Coach Johnson has is how do we get Luther the ball in space and do what he does best? You know, a lot of people don't remember or don't know that he was an elite basketball player, so he's got really good short area quickness along with vertical speed. I mean, guy ran a 4.41, but he also can really move side to side and laterally. Very difficult for people to tackle or even want to tackle at 213 pounds. So I think it's going to be an exciting opportunity for him in that offense.
That's interesting because when you're saying that, that reminds me of one of the Bears wide receivers now. That's DJ Moore, who is great in those quick area speed, all of that. And obviously he can go downfield as well. But one of the things too, I got to tell you, Coach, when he came in to talk to us and even on the Zoom, and you said that it was going to be a blessing no matter where he was drafted, I'm not sure if he was feeling that for the first couple of days, because I think he was shocked that he ended up going to the Bears. I think he was shocked that he ended up going in the second round, or he was just in a really bad mood because he didn't seem too happy when we were talking to him. Is that the competitive spirit in him?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously there's a lot going on through a young man's mind. I don't think he was mad or frustrated. I think he was just taking it all in. I mean, I thought the tears on his face when he got the call from the Bears kind of said it all. Just thankful for the opportunity, thankful for the moment. Obviously, he's a fierce competitor, right? And competitors find anything they can to fuel that fire. And so, you know, if fueling that fire is saying he didn't get picked in the first round, then that's the best news that the Chicago Bears could ever ask for, because he's going to be extremely motivated and motivated to prove the rest of those other 31 teams that they were wrong.
He's one of those guys, like if you even look at a picture of him, you just look at his eyes, he's got those like angry, competitive, fiery eyes about him. And that's one of the things that we hear about him in games, that he's a different person like many football players are. Have you seen that? And how does it manifest itself?
Yeah, I mean, that's why we call him Touchdown Luther. When the ball in his hands, he just refuses to be tackled. I think if you watch most of his highlight plays, whether it was against Boston College, whether it's against Tennessee, Arkansas, Florida, 4th-and-17, Ohio State, like when the ball in his hands, he's got a stubborn refusal to be tackled. And, you know, you got to go into a different place. It's not always happy-go-lucky and smiling when people are trying to knock you down full speed.
Oh, Coach, I think one of the ways that we were able to just understand Ben Johnson's offense a little bit better, because it's new to us, at least in Chicago, is by this pick and getting Luther. You know, his production is out of the slot. So it would make a lot of sense that we see that happen at the NFL level as well. What about him made him so productive in your offense with Missouri in that slot receiving role?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about matchups, right? If you're playing in the slot in an 11 personnel set and people are playing in a nickel defense, then they're putting their third best corner on one of your best wide receivers. And so you're going to get one-on-one matchups with a lot of space, especially in NFL hash marks with they're only 6 yards apart. The spacing between the hash mark and the sidelines more like 21 yards instead of the really the 14 yards in college football. And so it's a lot of space for somebody to cover. Obviously, the rules in the NFL prevent contact after 5 yards. So again, this is where Luther Burden's basketball skills come into to play here, where he has, again, horizontal quickness, short area quickness, can get vertical with a vertical burst, and then break either right or left, depending on what the route's called. So obviously, Coach Johnson is going to be able to utilize that in whatever, you know, tactical ways he wants to.
Coach, we look at this time where everyone has an opinion. Everyone does the evaluation of the tape. I don't know if you've seen or heard about Steve Smith and James Palmer doing a deep dive on the film on your player. And it was interesting because Steve Smith talked about all the talent that he has, but in the tape that he wasn't necessarily full bore all the time. And I'm just curious as if there was an explanation on your end of why you think that was and what they're seeing on that tape. And if that had anything to do with maybe the quarterback play not being as good his last season as it was the year prior.
Who did that?
Steve Smith, former wide receiver, NFL wide receiver.
He's got his own issues to worry about. I'm not worried about somebody else's opinion about Luther Burden's tape. The Chicago Bears liked the tape enough and believed in it. He's all conference player, all American player. Everybody's got haters and critics. So, I mean, I don't really care.
Okay.
We're talking to Coach Eli Drinkwitz here on the Score, the Missouri head football coach. And I did want to ask you, too, you know, I think it's a cool thing that the Bears have a receiver from East St. Louis High School who's now on their team as well. Yeah, that's a powerhouse downstate. What stood out to you maybe in taking a look at his high school film, too, that made him somebody that you had your eyes on as well?
Yeah, he's a legend in the city of St. Louis. They call him Touchdown Luther, whether that's from the J-Full League, where he played his little league football all the way up to high school at Cardinal Ritter and then his senior year at East St. Louis. Elite competitor, ball in his hand. I remember him playing against IMG on tape, you know, an all-star high school football team. He's the punter. He takes a punt and just decides to pull it down and goes and scores. Wasn't even a designed fake punt, you know, but that's just who he is. Elite player, elite competitor, and really excited for his next opportunity.
Coach Drinkwitz, we appreciate the time. He is the head coach of the Missouri Tigers football team joining the Midday Show. Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, and Mark Grody on the Score. Thank you.
Thanks, Eli.
Thank you, MIZ.
somebody has to say ZRU, but as somebody who went to a non-journalism school, it can't be me.
Also, someone who went to another SEC school, definitely not going to be me.
All right. Somebody out there, maybe it's our buddy Reese Johnson. Reese will probably say ZRU. He was a former production assistant at NBC Sports Chicago and associate producer. Just so like, I'm no, voting
it's
Reese.
It's not going to be me. Not this Starkville kid. No. Spent too much time in Stark Vegas.
Shout out to Reese the P1.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Luther Burden to turds.
6'2", 206, around a 4'4", 140.
Not at his pro day.
What was his pro day time?
He didn't run at his pro day, I don't believe, because he didn't feel like he needed to. Even though his quarterback needed some help, he decided he wasn't going to participate. A lot of people are talking about that. That's why guys are dropping. If he doesn't get the ball when he believes he should, becomes unfocused.
Okay.
Explosive with the ball in his hands. You get a lot of usage out of him. At times, they seem to force the ball to him. This is the criticism right now.
Okay.
Against bigger and physical teams, didn't answer the bell with the same energy.
When we look at all this, Steven, obviously these guys are moldable, right? This is a work in progress. You say
you
that
hope
all
some
the time.
Are. You hope you, some
you
hope, are.
You, yes, you hope you are. And obviously the more moldable the player is, the more coachable he is, the more you want him in your room.
Yes,
if
sir.
If you're the position coach specifically, certain traits are correctable. Certain traits are correctable by the individual.
Correct.
Because it's a lot of want to.
Really awesome 89 show pod that you should check out on YouTube with our next guest and Steve Smith Sr. We talked about it as a show, after checking it out, and we were like, you know what? This is a perspective that we need to get on the air so people know what it is that has been said and how Luther Burden got here and maybe even ended up being someone that the Bears could draft. James Palmer does an incredible job for Underdog Sports and Bleacher Report. The 89 show is fantastic. He joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. James, thanks for joining us. I thought that you guys' breakdown of Burden, it was really developed because you guys were, what, 20 minutes talking about him and breaking him down. As a prospect, what's the background here? What are important things that you think Chicago fans need to know?
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me. And we went 20 minutes. I think we went that length on a lot of these prospects. It's been a deep dive specifically on these receivers, so check them out. And Luther's was an interesting one for sure, because one of my favorite things about doing the show with Steve, who's one of my best friends, is he comes with his intel, I come with my intel, and we don't discuss it till the show starts. And as you can see, as you guys said, you watched it, like, a lot of carryover, right, between what I heard and what he heard. And I always find that to be really interesting from what he's seeing in film, what he's hearing from people around the league, what I'm hearing from people around the league. The consensus really was this. There's definitely some question marks. And where he lands is going to be interesting, and how that team handles those question marks. Universally, everyone I talk to, from receiver coaches to pro personnel guys to assistant GMs, GMs, offensive coordinators, the guy can go. You put the ball in his hands, he puts his foot in the ground, he can make people miss. He is electric. It's a different player when he's running the route than when the ball gets in his hand. And I found that to be kind of an interesting, almost universal thing that was brought up. And is that correctable? Like, that's one of those things. Is some of the character questions that some people had around the league about him, are those correctable? Was that part of his situation? Was that part of his situation with the coaching staff? How he was used? Is that what he can run? Or is that what the coaching staff could use? All of these things were really, guys, a lot of questions that teams were trying to figure out and working really hard to figure those out, because the talent is there.
So James Palmer, yeah, that was a great breakdown. And Lawrence sent it into the group chat, and he's like, listen to Steve Smith. But I went back and I listened to you, because, you know, yeah, you're the stuff that got me, man, for whatever. Steve is like, you know, whatever, he's an NFL wide receiver. But here's the thing. I'm not an NFL wide receiver, and you're not, but you've clearly dug into the news part of it. And that part was especially fascinating. So with that in mind, they know this, right? Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles know all of this. And we've listened very carefully to what Ben has said. They must have the belief that Ben and Antoine Randall L are up to the task of coaching this guy the right way.
Yeah, I think there's, and I'm not sure if this is the episode I said it in or not. It might have been in one we were doing on Travis Hunter, honestly. And breaking news, all position coaches are not created equal, guys, in the NFL. I was actually at the CU showcase up in Boulder talking to an NFC wide receiver coach who was like, I'd say there's seven good wide receiver coaches in the league. And we were talking about this with Travis Hunter, because position coaches have to be, in certain instances, much more in depth than just going, you know, no, on this, you got to run a post. No, on this, it's a curl. There's a lot of intricacies that go into your position coaching. If you have a really good one, and I think Luther would benefit from having a really good one, which I think he does in Chicago, those are the teams that usually have more confidence when picking players that have some of the questions that I brought up, right? If you're curious about a player where it goes, all right, this is one of the biggest recruits Missouri's had in recent memory. He, because of that, was maybe granted some liberties on campus. He was kind of able to do whatever he wanted to do on campus in some people's minds. Is that something that when a change of scenery happens and that position coach and that offensive coordinator and that organization bring that together and that's no longer an issue? Those are what good staffs have the ability to evaluate and have the ability to correct. I think that's why at the beginning of the process, and that's why these are all pieces of the process, he was considered right up there with Matthew Golden and Tech McMillan. And then as the process was going on, I'm hearing from more teams going like, no, he's a second round pick, because we have these things that need to be answered. Now we'll find out if, right, Ben Johnson is running an organization and a coaching staff to where these things can be corrected. Because, you know, I always say these guys are works in progress because they're just starting their NFL journey. The talent is exceptional, especially with the ball in his hands. So what did they see that was correctable, I think, is going to be paying off big time, or it's going to be rearing its head pretty early, actually.
I'm guessing that Antoine Randall-El is one of those seven good wide receiver coaches
because
of the way the Lions receivers played, and then also because Ben Johnson gives him a promotion to assistant head coach so we could bring him over from Detroit. Right, James?
Yeah. He's definitely in that group. It's funny because I asked him when he said, you know, some guys just talk, and I was like, all right, give me the seven. And I'm not going to tell you guys the seven because I don't want to roast all the coaches across the league, but he was on that group. He was on that list. And I think that's really important when you have guys that have a ceiling like Luther has. And has the ability also, let's not just talk about Luther. Like, let's talk about Rome and what he needs to grow. We did a great breakdown evaluating his entire rookie season. I'm just here plugging the channel. And we did a great breakdown of Rome and what his rookie season was about and what could happen. So it's not just with Luther, but obviously that's the focal point here, because when you have a ceiling as high as his can be, what are the little intricacies that the guy who spends every day with you can fix and correct? Not only in terms of your game, which how do we get the route running to be as explosive as it is with the yards after the catch, but then the character questions that some teams have and a couple of things that need to be figured out very early. Well, the position coach is a huge, huge part of that, because Ben Johnson, we all know, has a ton on his plate.
I love that you do the show with Steve Smith. He's always been one of my favorites. I was covering the playoff game where he went for 218 and two touchdowns against the Bears back in 2006, where he just turned the lights out on the Bears in that game. But I do know that there are people that get upset with what I think are honest breakdowns that he does. And he even mentioned that, like, hey, maybe he won't even want to talk to me after he hears this. I'd love to know, as much as you're willing to share, how many of the guys that maybe talk tough then get back to Steve and get better because of what he's trying to tell them on how to do their craft?
Yeah, it's more than you think, honestly. I put players in different categories. Like, a really good example is, I live here in Denver. Tim Patrick, who was with Ben Johnson up there in Detroit, and just a grinding type of receiver. He's a Utah guy. Steve's a Utah guy. I remember Tim telling me, like, Steve, I sent him my reel and plays, and he just ripped me to shreds. And I wrote him back, give me more. What else do you need? What else do you want to rip me apart about? Steve loves those type of guys, because that was Steve. Steve got destroyed in draft evaluations. He was evaluated as just a return man, if you remember, when he came into the league. Nobody thought he was going to be a receiver. Like, he met, I believe, during the draft process. We were having this conversation the other day. I think he only met one offensive coordinator during his draft process. Like, only physically spoke to one, because that's how he was viewed. So he loves when he knocks guys down, and then they come right back at him, but also in a manner of which, okay, like, what else did you see? Like, that went on at the CU showcase. Him and I were standing right there next to Travis Hunter, and in between reps, Travis was coming over, and they were kind of like barking at each other. Like, they were going back and forth with each other. And then afterwards, Travis comes over. What'd you think? Like, what'd you think? Everybody asks for Steve's opinion. And I think that's the cool part. It's not just players, man. We had like four or five head coaches there going, Steve, why don't you coach, man? Come on. You evaluate the game. Why don't you coach? Steve goes, you know why I don't coach? Because I don't like to repeat myself. And I thought that was a pretty good response.
That is outstanding. Speaks also, you can put Steve Smith on the list of guys that I will sometimes get mistaken for. Like, if I put on a cap.
Oh, I can see that. I got 100%. Right?
And you flip, do the flip up? The
yeah. I have my Chance the Rapper White Sox cap is actually perfect for that. And then I could, and shout out that his son was playing soccer at DePaul. My alma mater.
Yeah. Steve Smith's was?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody knows that I get mistaken for James Palmer all the time.
All the time.
It just it happens
all the time.
I went as James for Halloween one year.
It's funny.
Oh, Layla, I dig that.
Layla Rahimi walked in here and said, you look just like a guy I used to work with, James Palmer. It's funny that she's
my girl.
Yeah. She's now our midday host here at The Score. She speaks super highly of you.
Oh, we go way back. Yeah, we go way back. I've known Layla since our days in Houston. My first time in the NFL, covering Texans on a daily basis down there many moons ago with Gary Kubiak and company with a dynamite quarterback, nothing like Caleb Williams, Matt Schaub running the show.
Hey, James, what have people told you around the league about Ben Johnson?
I'll start with one of the more interesting ones that's been given to me, and this has been said to me by a couple of guys who have taken over as a first-time head coach and then taken over play calling in that first year. And they were like, this isn't a slight to Ben. I think he's the best play caller in football. This offense coordinator was telling me. And he was like, but when I became a head coach and calling plays my first year, I was not nearly the play caller that I was when I was just focused on calling plays. There is so many more people coming into your room, whether it's the PR staff, whether it's the medical staff, whether it's business side of things, whether it's football operations, all this knocks on your door. To be able to handle all of it is a big undertaking. But I think Ben's process, he told me, is an advantage because he kind of has gone through it a couple of years. He's been preparing for it a couple of years. I don't think anything I'm saying right now, he probably hasn't heard or prepared for, right? Like these little idiosyncrasies that happen with being a head coach that are not there when you're an offensive coordinator, a lot of guys are learning those on the job. Like hiring your staff is one of the biggest things that you do, right? And the questions that most guys I've talked to that have had multiple cracks at being a head coach is, the questions I ask the second time around, guys, are so much different than the questions I asked the first time.
Yeah, that's great
stuff. Just because I learned so much about what I'm looking for in assistants. My point of this is the length that Ben has taken in this process, I think, is an advantage for him. And the encouragement that he has had from others around him about preparing him for this, I think, helps him in some of these. Some of them you're never going to learn outside of just doing them on the job, right? They're just impossible to simulate. But I do think because of the way his process has gone and the way he's gone about it, prepares him a little bit better than some other first-year head coaches. But I think he's going to be outstanding. There's a reason why so many places wanted him, even when they didn't have a chance at him. I think the cultural change that we've seen there already, to me, the interior of the line moves in free agency. Joe Tooney is one of my favorite players in this league. You talk to anybody in Kansas City about the importance of those Super Bowl runs and what Joe Tooney played in those. I think him changing kind of the look of the way Chicago approaches things with those three moves on the interior line, even before the draft, kind of shows me what Ben's shooting for.
Your thoughts, James Palmer, echo some of the reporting that we did on this show leading up to Ben Johnson's hiring and just after, when we were able to share with people that he took the extra year of being the number one head coaching candidate to really think about everything you're talking about, what his challenges would be as a first-year head coach who's also a play caller. And look what he's got. Dennis Allen, sure, somebody who can handle the defense. We know that's good. But Declan Doyle is there's an administrative component to what Declan Doyle is happily willing to do as an offensive coordinator that speaks to exactly what you're talking about. And I don't know how much it exists in this way in the NFL, that there's an OC who's going to do some of the grunt work like Declan Doyle is so willingly. It's really fascinating how Ben has made this happen.
Now I understand the Halloween costume. Like, now I get it. This is because we're all on the exact same page here.
One more thing before we let you go, James. How did you view the discussion around Shadur? Because you've been to Boulder. You talk to NFL people all the time. I felt like it missed a lot of nuance, but I'd love to know someone who is in it every day what you thought was important about it.
I think the process wasn't handled properly. And I think Shadur, to talking to people in Cleveland, handled his first media availability on that conference call with the Cleveland media exceptionally well and almost admitted that, yes, we went about this the wrong way. And I've said this before, and I think a perfect example of, and it's apples and oranges, but compare what Jackson Dart did in the process to what Shadur did in the process. Let's go through Jackson Dart, right? He goes, and he was probably nowhere near Shadur at the end of the college football season in some teams' minds, and he goes to the Senior Bowl, and he absolutely crushes it and talks to everybody and competes his ass off. And then he goes to the Combine, and he throws, and he really competes at the Combine, which is important for a lot of teams, getting to see one quarterback throw, then the next quarterback, then the next quarterback, and you can see traits really well there. At his pro day, he was asking teams what they wanted to see him do. And to me, going through all of those things, that Shador really didn't do any of them. And in all honesty, the showcase was a bit of like a ha-ha, laugh-laugh while we're going through the workout, which is a bit strange. Like, Shiloh's out there, like, telling jokes while he's going through his throwing process, which is like, this is a job interview. And the way some of the interviews went, and the way teams told me the way some of the interviews went and the way he tried to dictate things, you can only dictate things when you're at the top of the draft. So I look at the way the two players handled it, and I think their spot in the draft kind of equates to how it was handled. But also, we're seeing college players have a lot more power. So this is another part of the process we're going through when these guys are driving Bentleys like Shador to practice. So you can only dictate things if you're in the 1% of the 1% of the draft. We watched it with Marvin Harrison Jr. a year ago, who actually asked teams, do you need me to work out? They all said no. But then Abdul Carter took very few interviews. You can only handle the draft in the manner in which Shador handled it if your talent allows you to do that.
Yeah,
and I think we saw that his talent did not allow him to handle it that way.
Everything that people were afraid Caleb Williams was going to do last year and treat these interviews this way, apparently that's what Shador did. Diana Russini came out today and said that one executive told her that Shador approached his visits with teams as a recruiting trip instead of as a job interview. That's going to turn some people off right there.
It really is. And let's just not get it twisted here. Like, Shador's talent set is nowhere near Caleb Williams' talent set. So when you look at traits, he doesn't have any wow traits. Is he really, really tough? For sure. Is he accurate? Definitely. Are there athletic ability that can let you run around like, you know, like we've seen Caleb do, actually? No, it doesn't exist. And that's part of his game. And when you have elite athletes running you down, that's not really obviously going to translate. So his strengths didn't translate that well. And then when you go about a process to where there's not that many suitors, there really weren't that many suitors for you, and you turn a couple of them off early, I think it showed that he did understand, because his tone towards the end with his meetings, I was told, was very different than his tone in the beginning of the process. So what does that show us? That he was kind of figuring out, okay, I don't think we went about this the right way entirely. I'm excited, guys, to see him show up in Cleveland, because he probably landed in the best possible place he could. He's going to get a chance to compete. And what type of competitor are we going to see show up? Because he's never been coached by anybody outside of his dad after the age of like 14. And I'm not saying he can't do it, but I think we all want to see if he does, because I think we want to be proven a little bit wrong in this process, that he's going to go out there and in battle. And we're going to get a chance to see it because of the situation he's in.
James, thanks so much for your time. You need to check out the 89 Show on YouTube. All the stuff that you guys are doing with Underdog is incredible. Let's visit again soon, man. This was outstanding.
I don't come on Chicago enough. I don't like this. You know, both my parents are natives, you know, Arlington Heights, Roselle. I grew up going back home, and guys, have me back.
All right,
the Chicago.
Done deal. We'll have you back on. I mean, you'll be our Arlington Heights correspondent for when the team moves there.
When the team moves
there. Or the Roselle correspondent for when the team moves there. You don't know, Lawrence.
You never know. Done. All of those
Roselle
things.
Fire department. Let's go.
Shout out to the Roselle Fire Department.
Just another day.
My grandfather was chief, you know, no big deal.
Get out of here.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, we talk a lot of Roselle Fire Department on this station.
I know. That's why I threw it in there, just so you guys could transition to your next guest or topic very easily.
Thank you very much.
It works out great because, you know, we know that the Roselle Fire Department softball team is strong. You know, they always beat the police. So, you know, like, it's
understandable.
It's a thing. It's a thing out here for sure. James, you're the best, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Guys, take it easy.
Thanks, James.
That's James Palmer of Underdog, and you should check out the 89 Show on YouTube. Seriously.